Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com.
You can really do whatever you want at a Waffle House, within reason. And I learned in
And people have.
Yeah. I mean, it is a place where that, at its best, is a live and let live environment.
Hey, y'all. I'm Tommy Tomlinson. And from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Southbound. No matter your culture or upbringing, at some point, if you live in the South, you wind up in a Waffle House. They're a filling station for working people. A place for old men to sit around and argue. A cheap date. A late night hangover cure. A couple of years ago, photographer Micah Cash became fascinated with the Waffle House and what it represents, especially when you're on the inside looking out. That led to his new book, Waffle House Vistas, published by our friends at the Bitter Southerner. Here's our conversation with Micah Cash. Micah Cash, I guess the obvious first question is, why the Waffle House?
Waffle House in this regard is twofold. One, it is synonymous with the South. We see it everywhere, and many of us have experienced it in some capacity across the spectrum, either positively or negatively. But we know what it is. It's recognizable. It hasn't changed, you know, for 60 years. And so I liked that sameness. I also liked that consistency of what it means in visual culture and in greater Southern culture. And that was the reason I used Waffle House instead of some other type of fast food restaurant, because Waffle House really is the same everywhere, right? It's just a shoebox for the most part. Whereas here in Charlotte, we could go to probably six different architecturally designed McDonald's. And it's just as ubiquitous, but it's not uniquely Southern. It's not uniquely a place that people latch onto emotionally, which is that's interesting, right? Like that people can latch onto Waffle House because it is a marketed fast food restaurant that's the same everywhere, but somehow speaks to us as a person, speaks to us in experience and who we are and where we've come from.
I feel like every Southerner has their own sort of personal Waffle House history. Yeah. You know, what's your history with the place?
My Waffle House history is probably similar to a lot of people. I would go there late nights during college, you know, when you're trying to procrastinate or you're trying to cram. We would go there in high school, you know, when you're just joyriding with your friends, when your parents let you out on a Saturday afternoon. What are you going to do? I don't know. Go to the mall, go to Waffle House.
Yeah, I think in a lot of towns, it's the only place that a young person could go that was open late, you know? And so it's like, you felt grown up there because it was 11 o'clock.
That's right. And back then, you know, you could still smoke in a Waffle House and all right. those things. So I had a lot of friends that would smoke in the Waffle House and then go home and their parents would be like, you smell like me. Well, I was at a Waffle House. You know, it was a way to get away with it.
Right.
But, you know, so like when you're young, it means a certain thing. And as you get older, it means a certain thing. And amongst my travels for this book, doing the field work, if I were visiting a restaurant between the hours of, say, 7 a.m. to about 9:30, there were regulars in every town I went to, and they would be there every day, and I would talk to the servers about it, and they knew them by name, knew what they liked, knew what was going on in their lives. And so when you reach that age, and almost all of them were older, right, retired, Waffle House means something different. And I know a lot of people, you know, Waffle House can also mean something very traumatic. It could be violent. It could be something that's not good. But it is still a part of the fabric of not only our country, but more specifically the South.
I know one of the things that you wrote about in the foreword of the book was that, you know, at the time that you were considering all this, and maybe during some of the work you were doing on it, there had been some racial incidents at Waffle Houses, usually involving police and young black people or something, and that I think Bernice King had called for a boycott of the Waffle House or something. Is that something that gave you pause as you were sort of embarking on all this?
I think all of those subjects give me pause as an artist, as a creator, right? To be able to talk about what stories are truly my own. What stories can I weigh in on? How can I use metaphor in creative ways to try to make the world a better place? And so I was cognizant of all that. And I think the string of incidents that I that took place in the spring of 18, leading up to Bernice King. It felt more like what was happening was lost, right? Because it was also among that situation, I believe, at the same time when there was an incident at the Starbucks, and Starbucks made every employee do cultural sensitivity training, which I think we should all do. Most of us get a new job and we have to do sexual harassment training, normal onboarding, and now maybe active shooter training. But very few of us have to do any type of cultural sensitivity training, even in the service industry. That's something that could have been talked about. I think the string of incidents that happened in 2018 also, they create larger narratives because they're about things that are very real, such as police brutality or systemic racism. And what gets lost is, hey, this thing happened at a Waffle House. And thus, Waffle House becomes the story. And, you know, I'm not here shilling for Waffle House, but I think one of the points I tried to make in that essay is that fast food, and Waffle House in particular, is really just a stage where our cultural tensions come out, because especially at 2 a.m.
Right.
Like we are all living in this country with very real issues and very real tensions, and at times they boil over. And sometimes that's in the street, and sometimes that's in a fast food restaurant.
Did you tell the people at Waffle House what you were doing at any point?
I would. So, you know, I feel like every question we can come back to that, why Waffle House? Yeah. Another reason why Waffle House is because you can really do whatever you want at a Waffle House, within reason. And I learned in
and
my...
And people have.
Yeah. I mean, it is a place where that, at its best, is a live and let live environment. There's no real judgment. And as long as you're respectful and as long as you do what you're supposed to do, people will put up with anything. And for a certain amount of time, right? You get your food in 8 minutes, you eat your food, you might stick around for more cup of coffee, and then you're on your way. One of the things, you know, that was really interesting in terms of that, you know, why Waffle House, is because I knew I could make photographs and not really be hassled. One of the thing, if you're a photographer, particularly if you're in documentary work, and I'm not an assignment photographer, right? I don't routinely do that for newspapers or media outlets. When you're carrying a camera, people look at you weird, and they assume you're a journalist. They might assume, you know, depending on who you are, you might be some type of terrorist, you know, looking for information. And when you're out in the field, you are looking for information. You know, I'm looking for ways to talk about the world we live in, and through creative metaphors and through engagement that everybody can have some type of entry point to. And so I was very aware, when I wanted to start thinking about how to talk about these issues, that I needed a place where people weren't going to hassle me. And so Waffle House was one of those answers. And people would always ask. Some people at times they wouldn't. But it would be after dinner. It was always very interesting how I would sit down, I would get my coffee, I would eat, I'd be looking the whole time. And when I was finally ready to pick up the camera and photograph what I was seeing, I would do it. And then someone would ask, what are you photographing? Why are you photographing the parking lot? And when I tell them what I would do, most of the time, they would just start talking to me. And it would be an autobiographical discussion about, like, let me tell you about how I got this job. Let me tell you about how I got stuck in this county. Let me tell you about, I really wanted to be this in college, but something changed. And there was so much personal information just brought forth from people. And I would sometimes go to a Waffle House to do field work, thinking it'd be a quick, easy in and out, and I'd be there for an hour and a half just talking to people. The camera would be put away, you know, an hour and 15 minutes ago, because once I got the shots, because I had those very strict rules of what I was photographing, I was done.
Yeah, so let's talk about those rules for a minute, because I think, you know, most of us who go to Waffle House and we talk about our experiences, mm-hmm. you talk about the food you have, right? With watching, as you mentioned, I think in your introduction, that's sort of the mesmerizing, just watching those guys on the grill and the mm-hmm. things they can do. And it's one of the all-time great people-watching places. You know, because as you said, all of humanity comes through the Waffle House at one point or another. But you turn the camera in the other direction. There's no food in any of these pictures except like the condiments of the tables. And there's no people in the pictures except for maybe one or two shots where somebody's wandering by outside. It's always looking out onto the surrounding area. So how did that choice come about?
That choice came about for two reasons. One, my general interest in art and in visual culture is in how architecture and landscape can talk about cultural and social geography. Can we look at who we are and what we value as a society by what we build and how we parcel it out? Two, in photography especially, if you have people in a photograph, unless they are components of a space or components of a landscape, the photograph becomes about that person. And so there was a real chance that if I am photographing the people at the Waffle House or the person working at the Waffle House, it becomes a photograph about this person. We'll call her Betsy. We'll call him Todd. And then you want to know Todd's story. But the project was not about individual people. The project is really about a segment of society, an entire third to 40% of this country economically. And Waffle House, in many ways, is the vehicle, it's the metaphor to talk about that. And I wanted to make sure that the understanding of that metaphor was created once you realize the photograph is in a Waffle House. Because then all of those other things that are connected to Waffle House, the sights, the sounds, the smells, the type of people eating there, what you might eat there, your personal relationship to it, you bring that to the photograph immediately. But I'm forcing you to look out the windows at what is in the surrounding area. And sometimes what you see in those surrounding areas are very bleak. Other times you're in a suburban, you know, strip mall and it might be a grocery store. Other times you're in an urban environment and you're like downtown Birmingham. And so it's a project that really requires a lot of work from the viewer, and I like that. I'm not going to make it easy. And I also get a little bit of artistic satisfaction of not giving you what you want as a viewer. When you sit down and you see that's a Waffle House photo, you might say, oh, I really want to see the food. Oh, I remember that time I had this really great waitress. I really want to see that waitress. And so not giving you that, withholding that, makes you really focus on what I'm showing you and fill in that gap between what you expect and what I give you as an artist.
Somebody mentioned maybe in one of the introductions that was written for the book that one of the commonalities about the Waffle House is that the people who are in there are not the 1%. Mm-hmm. You know, that is a place where people who are poor can afford to eat still. And so there's, even though there are other people who are there for other reasons, a lot of the sorting, I guess, that comes before you even walk into a Waffle House is economic. And the surroundings reveal that. A lot of the pictures you have are of sort of budget motels and that sort of thing. Are there things about that that sort of surprised you as you kind of looked outward, or was that kind of the statement you were hoping to make with the photo?
Yeah, that statement in the foreword by Maurice Carlos Ruffin about, like, this is a place and all of us are not the 1%, to sum him up, is what he says. And he talks about that as being a political statement, and which it is. And even if the 1% is eating there, they're in a Waffle House for a reason, right? Whether it's a novelty reason or whether it is truly they're tapping into the same reasons that we might go to the Waffle House. And so part of it is economic, but part of it is also, it's a place of comfort for people, especially people who might be dispossessed or people who might be on the lower end of the economic spectrum. You do not feel judged. You are amongst people like yourself. And so using both of those together, I thought was a really good package to talk about those narratives and to try to seek those narratives out. And one of the things I'm always looking to do in my work is ask really hard questions and have a messy conversation. Because if you're truly asking hard questions or you're truly participating in a discourse, you know that it's not a binary thing. It's not red or blue. It's not white or black. There's a lot of stuff in between and a lot of ways to get messy and a lot of contradictions that we have to rectify with ourselves as we figure out what our values are.
What are a couple of the questions you were asking as you went into all this?
Well, one of the questions, going back to your last question, is really, what did I expect to see? What was the hypothesis? And it began because when I was coming back from a different field work for a project that I still haven't finished. And I stopped at a Waffle House because I just wanted something quick. I wanted something that was comforting. And that was just kind of big and greasy because I had like a 6-hour drive and I didn't want to stop a lot for food. And I was just doing my normal thing. I was eating and I looked up and I saw this very bleak vista. And I thought to myself, huh, I wonder how many Waffle Houses are next door to a Dollar General. That's an interesting thought. I wonder if I could find some statistics about it. But as an artist, when you think, I want to find statistics, it really becomes, ooh, I should go see how many Waffle Houses are next to Dollar General. And whether there were more than I anticipated or less than I anticipated, it was that discussion of this is a population where money can be made. And so you start to ask greater questions about our society and greater questions about America's version of capitalism, especially in 2019, where, one of the best things you can do if you want to get rich is make money off the poor, right? How do you find ways to do that? And those are really big, sometimes hyperbolic questions, right? And they seem somewhat ridiculous if you're just eating hash browns to start thinking about that. But when you look out the window and you start seeing what you see and then asking questions about why you see them and what that might mean, suddenly that metaphor starts to unravel and you start to really think about those things. And that's really what I wanted to bring to this project, was sort of force people into a discussion on how visual culture also relates with architecture and landscape.
When we come back, Micah Cash talks about traveling the South to shoot pictures at Waffle House and what he ate when he got there. That and more ahead on Southbound.
Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com.
Hey, y'all. 2020 is going to be a big year in politics, particularly here in Charlotte. If you're looking for a new podcast to listen to, I'd highly recommend WFAE's newest podcast. It's called Inside Politics, the RNC in Charlotte. Charlotte is preparing for 50,000 visitors for the Republican National Convention. But how will the RNC impact Charlotte? Join my WFAE colleagues Steve Harrison and Lisa Worf for the Inside Politics podcast, where they cover the RNC and the 2020 election through the lens of Charlotte. Listen to Inside Politics now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and WFAE.org/insidepolitics. Now, back to our conversation with Micah Cash. I know one of the pictures in particular I remember, I think it was, if I remember right, Newport, Tennessee, you have a picture, and it's sort of in the corner as you're sitting out in the window, so you see it backwards. It's like a help wanted sign for the Waffle House. And then as you look out at the, I think it's the Knight's Inn across the road there, there's a help wanted sign there too. And so I assume you intended that juxtaposition in that.
Absolutely.
And did you find, as you talked to people there, a lot of people who were sort of, I mean, not just there, but along the trip, people who were sort of looking for work or in between things, or that the Waffle House is sort of a kind of a way station for them?
Yeah, I think that's very true. That I'm glad you brought that photograph up in particular, because that is one of the ones where I was making that photograph and I didn't really truly understand the power of it until I started to sort through what I had. Because you see the other help wanted sign, and if I remember correctly, all of the adjacent businesses, there was like a Taco Bell, you know, everything had a help wanted sign. And as I was driving through that strip of Tennessee into Kentucky on that trip, that was common. There were help wanted signs everywhere, and in mostly rural areas where there probably isn't really great economies. But if you already have two jobs in the service industry, how can you get a third one? That seems like a systemic issue, right? It seems like an economic issue. And I also know what it's like to work multiple jobs. And so you start to have these family dynamics where you have to sacrifice for your family or your child, but you might not have a child that understands that you have to work three jobs. You're just never around. And so there are all of these really rich, sad, economic conditions that most of us in America are really trying to plow through and make work, you know, for the right reasons. And at times you feel like the deck is stacked against you. You need a place amongst like-minded people to be in communion with. And sometimes that's over food. And so there were multiple times in the field work of this project where I was very depressed and very distraught. Because you see and you talk to people that are working so hard. And you know that to be true about this country. People work really hard in this country, and most of us are barely scraping by.
That reminds me of that Anthony Bourdain episode. Did you ever see that, where mm-hmm. he went to the Waffle House? And I think his phrase was, the Waffle House is a place where everything is beautiful and nothing hurts.
Yeah.
And I suppose that people who are not, don't have a lot of beauty in their life and may have a lot of pain, that's a good refuge.
Absolutely. And which is also striking in terms of when we have these violent incidents or racial incidents. That's why it might be even more shocking.
Because you expect that that's the place you get away from all that.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's exactly it.
You mentioned working two or three jobs. And I noticed in your introduction that you wrote, sort of in passing, you mentioned that you had done that yourself. Mm-hmm. So what's kind of your background and what kind of brought you to this line of work, the way you do things?
I'm an artist. So immediately, most people who say they're an artist, they have day jobs or they have multiple jobs to get
by. Starving artist is sort of implied.
We've dropped the starving to just be artist. Very few of us reach a level where we can truly do this for a living. But that's always the goal. And it's never a goal to make a lot of money. It's the goal to make enough money to get to the next gig, right? And make enough money to start the next project. And so I take a lot of kinship with musicians, like touring musicians that are just, if I can sell 4 CDs tonight, we got a full tank of gas and we can make it to the next show. And so I've been an artist for a long time, and I taught for a long time, adjunct. And, you know, so you're driving around the city and you're trying your best to land a full-time teaching gig, which is incredibly hard to do these days, especially when you have a wife and a family. And I chose to have a family, and I don't regret that choice. But it is, you know, academia, if you want to get into it, is not the safest place for someone who might want a family,
right?
Because you might have to move multiple times to land that good job. And so I, you know, was teaching. I was working part-time at arts nonprofits. When my son was born, I had just stopped teaching and I didn't have a job. So I'm like picking up retail shifts at the mall and doing whatever you got to do. You know, once you become a parent, you kind of become bulletproof. And you just lose all sense of pride and self-awareness. And you're like, I got my diapers.
Got to take care of the kids.
Let's do it, you know? And so that resolve of becoming a parent and trying to find pockets of my life where I could pull another shift, right, to get a few more dollars. And I've spent most of my life in arts nonprofits, and that's been my day job for most of my life. And for a couple of years, I was working in arts nonprofits in part-time capacities because they were just really small organizations and couldn't afford full-time staff. And now I'm back to being full-time in an arts nonprofit. And I did that all through my 20s and early 30s. And so sort of come back full circle to having a true 9-to-5, but with a mission-based artistic organization. And that allows me to make art.
I want to ask about sort of the challenges of the shooting at the Waffle House in particular. First of all, as just an amateur photographer, that's the kind of thing, you're shooting through a window, and I often look through my pictures and you can see my own reflection. I mean, did you have to like think about the angles and that sort of thing you're shooting at? Or is that just instinctive by this point that particular thing was?
It might be instinctive, but you do. You have to think about the angles. Someone asked me, I gave an artist talk last week, and someone was like, there's nothing at night. And I said, well, that's because if it's at night, it would just be photographs of myself.
Right,
looking
reflected.
At it. And some of the ones that are early morning, you can see reflections of people in the restaurant. So it might look like an empty restaurant, but if you look really close, you'll see that it's packed. And I think also the way I pulled back, right, that was a big step in this project, was when I started it for the first few months, the proof of concept was me literally photographing what I saw. And so there was no windows or anything. I was just like, here's a photograph. It's from a Waffle House. And I'm like, I'm going to put it in the title. But it didn't work because it was just a random bleak landscape. There was no context to it. And it wasn't until I really figured out that if I make a third of every image to show you that I'm in the restaurant and I have signifiers that show you exactly what restaurant it is.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So the first photographs, you couldn't see anything except literally what was out the window.
None of the window panes. I was just sitting there and photographing what I saw. Right. And you would occasionally get reflections. You would occasionally see things, but it lost context there too. So you'd just be like, that's just a weird photograph. But the minute I started pulling back and the minute I started placing the viewer inside the space and showing you what I was doing and thus what you were doing, was the minute it really took shape and started to gain its power. And I think there's a few photographs where you might be able to see my reflection, but almost always I'm at just the right angle because I'm trying to get as much distance as possible. Or if it's the right time of day, there are some photographs that are very flat and you can tell I'm either at a table or I'm at some place where it's just me parallel to the window. And I think the time of day, I was just able to do it without a reflection. But none of them are edited in any way to remove me or my presence in the window.
And did you come in there with much gear at all? Or I mean, no. What did you do anything? And I'm trying to think of what the light is like inside a Waffle House. Probably not great for a photographer. Maybe, but I'm just wondering sort of what you brought with you when you came.
I just took my camera. There was no alternative lighting sources. It was just the camera itself and the lens I was using and figuring out the proper way to expose it. And it ranges depending on the time of day, depending on like the way the restaurant was. And some of the photographs, if you look real closely, you can tell they're very slow exposures because you'll see like the streaks of the lights,
right.
But everything else is locked in. And other times I'd have to be very fast. And so it looks like the car is just, you know, in a stopped amount of time. And I just adapted the exposure, right, and the balance and everything based on what I was seeing.
When you walked in, did you try to figure out where's the right place for me to sit?
Of course. Once I realized this project had legs and I was going to commit to it, I would walk into a space and I would look. If it was a good day, I'd get one of those corner booths because I had two vistas to choose from and
right.
Sometimes one combined depending on what I saw. But there are some photographs. If I walked into a space and I was hungry or I walked into a space and I was tired, I sat anyway. So there's images from sitting at the bar. There's images from sitting at those low bars, you know, with the chairs and images from booths. And there would be times I'd also walk out, you know, like if I was on a road trip and I'm thinking, well, I need something from this half of Kentucky because that's a gap in what I've done. I don't know if the photo is going to turn out, but I want to, you know, try to have as much of a spectrum of the Southeast as I could. You know, I might visit two or three in that eastern part of Kentucky or western part of Kentucky. And there'd be times I'd walk in and I'd be like, well, there's no place to sit and there's a ton of people waiting. I could better use my time by going to the next exit. And sure enough, I'd get in the car, go to the next exit, and that Waffle House would be empty.
Yeah.
And so I would do that at times. There'd be times that I would pull into the parking lot and I just knew, like, I'm not going to find a place to sit. Mm-hmm. And with this project in particular, especially when you're on the road during the winter time, you have very limited sunlight. And so I knew I had to make work from about 6:30 in the morning to maybe 5:36 because you can't always count on the light being able to work for you. And so like there were sometimes I'd stop at a restaurant and it would just be just right in my face and you couldn't make a photograph.
I was going to say, I know from working with the photographers, early in the morning, late in the evening, so during the middle of the day, did you just...
Those are the best times to go. I'm one of the few photographers that is a landscape photographer, and I'm perfectly happy to shoot noonday sun.
Okay.
If I can get the content I'm looking for.
So the scenery is better at that time of day because of the light coming kind of straight down.
Yeah, and I like that in a project like this because it is representative of the time I was there. So if... Like there's one in particular from Louisiana, and it's like in a Walmart parking lot, and it was like 3:30 in August. It was hot, and the sun was beating. And you can like see the heat coming off this gross parking lot asphalt, and it is not a good photograph. But it made the book
because
it was so true to like what that day felt like in, you know, mid somewhere Louisiana.
Yeah. And how many would you try to see in a day normally?
It depended on my emotional state. Because a lot of them, they would, sometimes they get really intense, you know, if I was talking to somebody and I would be hearing a lot of stories. Because then you become like, people give you this information and then you sort of internalize it. And maybe that's an artist thing, maybe I'm just more emotional, but, you know, people would tell you heavy things at times and I'd be like, wow, I don't know what to do with that. I have to think about it. I have to let it, you know, I have to kind of like compartmentalize it inside. Other times, what I would do is I would book hotel rooms. And so it'd be like, all right, I need to get from Pensacola to New Orleans today. And when I get started, it'd be best if I could arrive in New Orleans, you know, right after dark or a little before dark and see what I find and see what restaurants I might want to visit. And that was the rule on the road. I would just go. And if I felt like taking a different way, I didn't always stay on interstates. I would just sort of go. And wherever I ended up, the only ones I particularly wanted one from my hometown of Aiken, South Carolina. So there's an image from Aiken in there. A lot from Charlotte, mainly because I did a lot of proof of concept here in Charlotte. And so in the project, the first third of the project, I would, on my days off, because I was working part-time jobs, I would just drive 2 hours away from Charlotte, go to a restaurant, and then drive 2 hours back and pick my son up from daycare until I figured out I have something here and now I need to go and bring more.
Right. Energy. I think it's obvious if you're just going up and down the interstate, you know, it's obvious where they are and stuff. But if you're going through smaller places and all, did you just do your GPS and say, take me to the nearest Waffle House? Or did you have some sort of guide to figure out like where you would go on a given day?
It would just be the GPS most days. There would be cities I would want to hit up. You know, I'm thinking, you know, if I'm driving through Alabama, I was actually at a conference in Birmingham, so I photographed every Birmingham Waffle House, knowing I really only wanted one in the book. And I would choose. I'd say, okay, I need to have one from Mobile. I'm going to have one from Mobile, so I would make sure I went there. And then I would stop at other ones throughout Alabama and Mississippi on the way there or on the way back, you know. So I would have waypoints. And then I also started to do things where if something was clearly in a suburb, I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what that looks like. So I would seek out, you know, the suburban Waffle House, where I would seek out.
Because those are a little more rare.
I mean, I don't know if they're more rare, but they definitely push back against this narrative that we have culturally about Waffle House. And early on, that was one of the things that I really wanted to do, was push back on Waffle House being this place for rural white America, which we might think about, but is not at all true. It is not. It serves everybody. And I can walk into a Waffle House and hear 5 languages and see people from all walks of life.
So about how many did you end up going to?
A little over 60 restaurants, and I made photographs in 45 of them. Mm-hmm. Some of them you just wouldn't have a good shot. Or it'd be the wrong time of day, or it would be an image that I knew I already had. And so I would shoot it, and I'd be like, yeah, that's junk. I'm not going to use it. But I would still go through the motions. I would still eat. I would still talk. But yeah, about 60, 65 restaurants.
So you've been to more than most of us, and certainly a wider geographic range than most of us. So do they all taste about the same?
Yes. If they don't taste the same, it's probably because the food is wrong or something, you know, like
so they're engineered.
The bacon wasn't cooked properly. It's absolutely engineered to be that. It's sort of like Domino's pizza, you know, like you know what you're going to get. And there's comfort in that. And if you talk to people at Waffle House or you talk to servers, you know, like you're supposed to get your food in 8 minutes. Like the whole thing is about efficiency and to give you what you're looking for in 8 minutes so that you can eat and get back on the road and also flip the tables, right? It's... You don't want people to sit all day because how do you make money?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was consistently mediocre, and that's okay because that's exactly what it is, right? And there's something about Waffle House when you walk into it, it is a silent acknowledgement. You understand you're walking into a place that most likely is going to have some grime. It may not be clean. I've been into some really clean Waffle Houses, but others, you and I both know, not that clean. And you're okay with that. And I think you do the same thing with the food. You know what you're going to get. But if you're in the right mood, it's delicious, right? There's a reason we like those hash browns, but there's nothing special about them. There's some clarified butter and some frozen potatoes, and that's it.
Yeah. that leads me to the question I have to ask. What's your go-to when you go in there?
If I want to eat, like an actual meal, two egg breakfast with hash browns covered. If I'm not concerned about calories, I'll put the cheese on top. And wheat toast, sometimes raisin, but usually wheat toast.
Scattered and covered or just covered?
Scattered. Yeah, don't give me that like
don't give you a little
brick
ring.
Of no, I want them all kind of well done. Yeah, and wheat toast with black coffee. And I'm happy. No grits. I don't want any of that stuff. Just give me eggs and a side of bacon.
Are you satiated with Waffle House for a while? Do you not feel the need to go back? Or
I felt like I was that way before I started the project. You know, but the metaphor just worked. And not only did the metaphor work, but the literalness of it worked. And I think when I'm building a project and when I know something is happening that's magical as an artist, and you're like, oh, this is a good way to talk about things, is there's multiple entry points for people. And I think part of the reach of this project is because there's so many entry points. And then if you want to come in and just talk about Waffle House, we can have that conversation. If you want to dig a little deeper and you want to talk about your experiences at Waffle House and what that made you feel, or maybe why you haven't gone back, we can go there. If you want to talk about the architecture and the landscape and about what you're seeing, we can go there. If you want to talk about income inequality and social mobility, we can go there. And it's all in this one project. And I, as an artist, will meet you where you want to engage.
In our distracted time, the most important skill we can develop is how to pay attention. Sometimes that just means looking in a different direction than everybody else. Micah Cash looked out the windows of Waffle Houses all over the South and saw a landscape that the rich and privileged among us try to avoid. But in those images, the warmth of the Waffle House itself is baked in. It's like looking from inside a fireplace. We all need a place that will take us in when we're down and out, depressed, and yeah, maybe a little drunk. Stare out the window, and you might be reminded of how much the world likes to push people around. But inside it's warm, and the waitress has called you honey, and the hot eggs are on the way. Southbound is a production of WFAE in Charlotte. Our audience engagement producer is Joni Deutsch. Our main theme music comes from Josh Turner. You can listen to this and other episodes of Southbound on the NPR One app, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find Southbound on WFAE.org, where each episode has show notes with more information on that week's guest. See y'all next time. Thanks for listening.
Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com. Additional support is provided by the Knight Foundation.